very popular to work with the mind, but I think it is something that originally was quite unique to the Buddhist teachings. Okay, so verse 2.
Wandering where it will, the elephant of mind will bring us down to pains of deepest hell. No worldly beast, however wild, could bring upon us such calamities.
So there's our first mention of hell. So I'm going to be saying more about it because it keeps coming up. But let's just say in this case, let's just call it the pains of deepest hell. Let's just call it dire consequences. Or worst case scenario. So he's saying that worst case scenario, we all have worst case scenario days, worst case scenario months and years, worst case scenario domestic situations, jobs, and so forth. But it obviously can go from bad to worse. And for instance, if you were living in many of the other countries of the world right now, where it's kind of like a continual September 11th, when you think of it, that's what we mean by dire consequences. And not just that the outer circumstances are so extremely, relentlessly painful, but also dire consequences infers that you're completely hooked into it. Because we know, maybe from our own experience or experience of other people that we respect and admire, that there are people who can go into dire consequence space, like the hells of the world, and actually keep their heart and minds open. So they aren't actually triggered by the situation. But the average, ordinary, most predictable situation is that all of us get hooked. When the outer circumstances are dreadful, our state of mind crumbles with the outer circumstances. So what he's saying is, there is no worldly beast, and later he's going to talk about tigers, lions, elephants, bears, snakes, and so forth, as well as ghosts and ghouls, and, you know, there is no outer thing, here he says worldly beast, that could bring us such dire consequences as our own state of mind. Now, this is really the theme of the book, and I hope it is very provocative. I hope there'll be some really provocative questions about this, because this is really what his thesis is, and it is very much the thesis of the Buddhist teachings, is that if we work with our minds, we are our world, no matter how ugly things are getting, our world becomes more workable. In other words, the very same dire consequences on the outside can be awakening our compassion. But usually what it does is awakens our anger, our resentment, our hatred, our fear, our wanting to retreat into ourselves. That's what it usually triggers when the outer circumstances are bad. But what he's saying here, simply in this, is that there is nothing on the outside that can make us suffer as much as our own minds. And so the whole chapter is about urging us to work with our mind. Now, I want to say something before we go into it any further. He's going to talk about the mind being like a, here he calls it the elephant of mind. Well, think of it, an elephant, a wild elephant. Usually, very commonly, our wild mind, and any of you who have meditated even for 2 seconds know what I'm talking about. It's funny, you know, because in the photographs of people meditating or in the statues, you know, you think that you sit there and you sit and some serenity comes over you. But instead, you recognize the wildness of your mind, and that's actually very, very crucial, like self-reflection, being able to see the state of your mind. So he compares it to a wild elephant. And I was thinking about this because very frequently it's compared to a wild horse. Now, if there was even one small pony running around in this room right now, it would be causing a lot of problems. So, how about a full-grown, wild elephant? So that's what he's saying is, the mind is out of control like that, and when the mind is out of control, there's a lot of destruction, there's a lot of harm that comes to ourselves and to other people. But I think one of the things that I want to stress here, because the emphasis is so much on the wildness of mind, is that mind, this mind that each and every one of us has, is actually a treasure. This mind is inherently awake. This mind is inherently flexible. This mind is inherently open and fresh. That is the true nature of your mind, my mind, and the mind of every living being. And this wildness, where does that come from? It's compared often to like clouds in the sky. You've probably heard that expression, sky-like mind. The mind, the nature of mind, is compared to like blue Colorado sky when there's no clouds. Imagine lying on your back and just looking up into that endless, endless, vast, it doesn't have any end, you know, that blueness of that sky. And sometimes when you do that, if you do that, your mind can merge with that sky. And you realize that that kind of openness and that kind of complete limitless space is available to every single living being in any moment of time. But then there are these clouds, right? They come in, and not only clouds, right? It can get really stormy, and from our perspective down here, the sky seems to go away. And that's where most of us find ourselves in terms of our mind, especially when we sit to meditate and we take a close look, is when you first sit,